Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast, where the Lorehound's your guides to all of time and space. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia, and this is our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series Doctor Who.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Season 1, Episode 6, titled Dot and Bubble.
And as much as we enjoy discussing this show between us, we also really want to hear from you. So please send any of your feedback to TARDIS@thelorehounds.com or visit our website at thelorehounds.com/contact. And you'll find there a contact form, or you can even use the built-in voicemail feature and leave us a voicemail. We can drop right into the episode. And also, please do check out our Discord server. We have a really fun, lively community. We're talking about Doctor Who. We're talking about a bunch of other stuff. It's a nice, positive place to talk fandom.
Please also consider subscribing to our Supercaster Patreon platforms. For as little as $3 a month, you get ad-free episodes and much more. Subscribing is a great way to help us make more timey-wimey podcasts.
And you'll find all those links in the show notes below.
Of course, this is our spoiler warning, blanket spoiler warning, everything that's ever happened in Doctor Who, including this episode, Dot and Bubble. So, Alicia, you have a correction to issue?
Yes. So the actor who plays the Doctor has issued a correction on the pronunciation of his name. We have not been pronouncing the N in his name, and apparently we should be. So it's
really
Nshuti. Yeah. Nshuti.
Nshuti?
Mm-hmm.
Nshuti. Just a little N at the beginning. See, that's fascinating because everything I've ever seen has been Shuti, even like David Tennant talking about his successor. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now I'm going to have to correct myself.
Yes, exactly. No, he just this week, he was just like, guys, okay, I have to do this for my mom, basically.
That's pretty funny. Nshuti. Okay. All right. We're working on it.
I was going to ask you what you thought.
Okay. This is my favorite episode of the season so far.
Okay. Okay.
It's honestly the best who's been since the Stephen Moffat era.
Uh-huh.
This is really great stuff. I love that they sort of baited us with the AI stuff, which was a critique of AI.
Right.
But they had a deeper meaning too. Like there were two bubbles, right? There was the bubble of the AI thing. And then there was the bubble that these people live in.
Right.
To the point where they don't even know that all their family and friends are dead.
Right. But then also the city's in a bubble too, apparently.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean is you know, they're isolated from everything. I do have questions that I know that you've raised, but to me, Doctor Who has never neatly tied up everything. And it's okay if we just like, it's all a morality play, right? Like we understood the messages here.
Right.
And I thought that they were done really well. And unlike the Space Babies episode where I thought it was really like, here is the moral of the story. Listen up now. I thought that this was done really subtly and in a way that felt raw and real.
Right. I mean, I think that it was kind of addressing a complex morality. You know, a lot of people say it's an episode about racism, but I would say that that was kind of peripheral to the real core question here is, what is your obligation to save people who don't want to be saved by you, you know, who just from their own stubbornness or racism or whatever confluence of factors, should you feel morally obligated to save assholes basically? And I don't know if, I mean, I guess they raised the question and that's very interesting. I had an initially mixed reaction to this episode and a lot of people did not like that because a lot of people very passionately love this episode. I've been thinking about it more and And I like it the more that I think about it, which is, you know, it's a good thing. It triggers that kind of thought, obviously. It's still going to be my third favorite of the season after Boom and 73 Yards. But yeah, it was a good one. It was a Dr. Light one again, which I didn't mind. Apparently it's because he had filming conflicts at this time. He was still doing sex education, but I think they handled that well. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I didn't feel like I was, you know, deprived of him. I thought he was there an appropriate amount of time for something like this, right? Where he's trying to break in the bubble. And I thought that his interactions with Lindy really subtly highlighted the both racism and classism in this society.
Yeah.
You know, when she immediately blocks him, but doesn't do that for Ruby. It's things that like you don't notice right away, but you do notice eventually. There's something that somebody raised on Reddit, I think it was, that I really resonated with, which was think about all the societies that had these backwards beliefs that the doctor said before, and it just never came up because the doctor was looking like a white human.
Right. No, I mean, it is. I do like that they explored that. I just think they could have done so. They could have leaned into that even more. It seems like they were kind of pussyfooting around it a little bit.
I didn't think so. I thought that. Okay. Here's the thing is I thought that they highlighted that when racism and classism are so pervasive in a society.
Right.
They're not going to just outright say it there until they're pushed to. They're going to be like, you're blocked. Oh, I don't. Are you two in the same room? Like the disbelief, because the idea of someone looking like Nshuti. OK, see, I'm working on it. The idea of someone looking like the doctor being an equal to them or acting like an equal is so foreign to them that it's almost weird. More than it is gross to them, right? It's something that they're like totally unexpecting.
Yeah.
And so I thought that they did a really good job highlighting that because it made the gut punch later feel right. Because it made it so that sure, that's the third step in the Martin three-step reveal, right?
Maybe it going in, it suffered a bit from the Black Mirror comparisons in my book, but I guess for me, my main complaint is like just that the level of stupidity amongst these people got a little annoying. They were so irredeemable that I was like, why are you wasting your time on them? Why on this girl? Why this girl? Out of all the people in this city, even, why her?
I mean, the doctor tries to save even murderers, right? Like, think about... forgot the name of the episode, but the vampires in Venice, where he's like, look, I'll find a planet for you.
Yeah, but okay, but why is she the one who warranted the special effort? Because they couldn't have been doing that with everybody in the city, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they actually, I think they had a really throwaway line that was like, you know, you're the only one who picked up, basically.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's what it is. And Ricky, but they couldn't were just have gone to themselves. Because Ricky doesn't wear the dot.
Right. No, that makes sense. But they just pushed themselves in on her like whole thing. They should have been talking to, what was his name? Gothic Paul. Gothic Paul cared.
But Gothic Paul, even when confronted with the reality of it, he's like, oh, not even I would say that. So I don't know. I think all of them were equally having disbelief.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, they were all like little crappy kids, but... some worse than others. And she seemed particularly bad. But of course, that's what we find out toward the end of the episode, how bad she is.
Yeah. And I got to say, you know, if you think that these people are unrealistically stupid, have you been on TikTok? Because there's some people on there.
I honestly don't spend much time on TikTok.
I love TikTok. It's got a lot of funnies. There are some people on there who... are in a bubble, I would say. And that's just the reality of like the whole point of this place is that these are people who grew up in bubbles whose parents paid for them to remain in a bubble.
Right. No, yeah, sure. It's definitely the you know, the comparison, the analogy is very much visible and present and valid, yeah. Yeah.
And Mummy is not having a great time.
No.
Mummy is gone.
No, Mummy is gone, but I think that we shall see Susan Twist again.
I think so, too. Well, Alicia, you've written a... did you give your hot takes yet? I feel like you did while I was giving mine.
Yes. Well, I thought that I was just weaving it in masterfully.
Oh, no? You did. You did.
Okay.
You know, I'm looking at the outline. I usually write a paragraph. You've written several. So let's get right into it.
Well, okay. So I basically have to give credit to Wikipedia. I copied and I modified because that saved me a lot of time this morning.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So plot synopsis is Lindy Pepperbean is one of the young and wealthy residents of the city of Fine-Time, shielded from the dangerous wild woods surrounding it. The children of their nearby homeworld, they are forced to work 2 whole hours a day on data processing before they're allowed to party. I know. But even then, they live through a social media interface, a literal bubble projected around their heads by floating dots, robots that also control direct their movements. Lindy doesn't have the moral fortitude to care when her friends start going missing, blocking the doctor when he tries to warn her about her own safety. But Ruby manages to coax Lindy into dropping her bubble to see what's going on. And Lindy sees giant slug-like creatures eating some residents, but ignoring her and others. The doctor and Ruby tell Lindy and her friends to evacuate Fine-Time via conduits, leading to an underground river. Lindy meets and is helped by her influencer crush, Ricky September. We find out that unlike the other residents, Ricky turns his bubble off regularly, so he knows how to do things like walk and think. The doctor realizes the slugs were created and bred within Fine-Time by the dots and are now gobbling up residents in alphabetical order. Ricky has also found out their homeworld has already been destroyed by the slugs, but doesn't tell Lindy. When the list gets to Pepperbean, Lindy, now hiding with Ricky in a place where the slugs can't reach her, is instead attacked by her own dot, which has gone all red and murdery. Ricky tries to help, but when the dot finally corners Lindy, she reveals Ricky's true surname is Coombs, thus before hers alphabetically, and abandons him to be killed by the dot. Lindy meets with the few remaining survivors that the doctor and Ruby rescued earlier and lies to them about what happened to Ricky. The doctor offers to take them in the TARDIS to find a new home, but they refuse. Lindy pointing to the doctor and saying it wasn't right for someone like him to socialize with her people. He warns the survivors that they will die out there as the wild woods are dangerous and begs them to let him save them. They launch their raft into the river and the doctor angrily and tearfully leaves with Ruby.
The drama of it.
Yes.
Drama. Yeah. Inshuti is really great at selling the drama. And, you know, we went into this and we had the bi-generation. And we were wondering, I remember you and I had this conversation when we were talking about the 60th specials, of will they leave all the, you know, the tortured soul parts of the Doctor with David Tennant's version? And will they have Inshuti? See, I'm working on it. Inshuti be more happy-go-lucky. You know, the happy parts of Matt Smith's Doctor. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think Inshuti has surprised me by really showing that tortured soul a lot of the time. You know, really being great at. I think Inshuti's doctor, rather than like staring off into the distance and remembering something terrible that happened, will react appropriately to the trauma he is facing in the moment.
True.
And I think he's that's the point of the therapy, right? Yeah, right. More present. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny that the season has gotten darker, and the darker it's gotten, the more people have gotten excited about it. But I have to wonder if new people who came with, you know, the Christmas special about singing goblins feel bamboozled by the frivolousness of those first couple episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. Space Babies was silly, but
yeah,
I thought the Devil's Cord was actually pretty serious. I mean, he's like, hey, look at this world that's completely destroyed in the future. There are stakes to what we do here.
Well, this was a kind of a transitional episode that was like half silly, half serious. Although I do wish this one had ended with an upbeat musical number like The Twist, but this time you just have like a montage of all the assholes not knowing how to make a fire and then going full Lord of the Flies and then dying in the wild. That would have been a satisfying ending.
Well, I've been thinking all week about there's always a twist at the end. Because That line has just been ringing in my ears.
Have you been? Did you notice anything? Have you been watching for it?
No, I'm just like, if there's always a twist at the end, is that what this finale is going to be about? We have, you know, somebody pointed out we only have two stories left because the finale is a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if next episode's going to address Susan's twist because now the characters are noticing
that
this person is everywhere. And so maybe that's like an inside joke of there's always a twist at the end. And like, that's how the season's going to wrap up.
Oh, that the reveal's going to be the twist at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah.
The Susan twist at the end.
The Susan twist at the end. Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that this is a through line through there. I like that indeed it's building up that every new episode we are seeing more and more of her. Yeah, so I just have to complain about just like a couple little things and then we can gush about the episode.
That's fine. I'll defend them.
Okay. So, first of all, I thought the alphabetical order explanation just like landed with a thunk with me. It really didn't
disagree.
Work
for me. Okay. Disagree.
And actually, this is not really a complaint. I thought that the whole having this code that you have to enter every 5 seconds was contrived, but I think it was really well done because it really amplified the suspense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how many times do we get some silly rule that's presented just for an episode to create suspense? I mean, that's Doctor Who, baby, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or babes, as I should say babes on this podcast.
Babes.
Because of Nshuti's doctor. Mm-hmm. Do you like that? Do you like the babes?
I mean, this is, I know it already from other people say it. It's not like, it's just certain types of English people say it, basically.
Oh, okay. See, I've not heard this before used like that in it.
Okay.
And the first time I used it, I was like, I don't know about it, but it's growing on me. It's growing on me. The babes.
No, it's warm. It's warm, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did wish that we found out a little bit more about this world because I was like, there's a night cycle where the sun clicks off. And I guess that's not, I'm just a world building junkie and I want to see the whole thing. That's just really a me thing. But I did like when Ruby, she was like trying to talk the lingo. Cause at first I thought that that's why they accepted her more. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's what I was supposed to think that she was. But then I started to, you know, that she was doing the lingo and reminded me of in Only Murders in the Building when Selena Gomez has to do the same thing when she's talking to someone from a younger generation.
Right.
And
right.
She's like, I can't even, I don't even know what the alpha kids say anymore.
Skibbity toilet.
Yeah. But I thought at first that that's why that Lindy was paying more attention to her. And so that is, I think, well done that later I thought, I was like, well, no, but the doctor's cool. Like he probably knows even more lingo than she does.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think there were two things that I thought. So the first thing I thought why they left Ruby on was because she immediately said, "Hi, I'm from Fine Time," which is
okay.
I thought the doctor didn't say that, and maybe I'm thinking like,
the doctor
tried first, and she turned him off. So he's like, "All right, she's going to shut you off. So why don't you say that you're from the company, and then maybe she'll keep you on." Like they had a debrief before before the second call. But I guess you know by the end we know the real reason why she blocked him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Exactly.
And I love how she's shocked by the fact that he can unblock himself.
Yeah. But then, yeah, that's why I question. Why not, like, try with others who, I don't know. Anyway. It was a bit on the nose with the whole eat the rich thing. But I did, like, there was something in my head. For a long time, I thought it was going to be revealed that this was, like, a computer or a cell or something. So, and they were computer viruses, these slugs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's also my fault that I was like looking for some other explanation about world building that wasn't there. But I had to laugh. You know the stories about people who follow Google Maps, like tourists in Australia who drove into a bay because the map said that where they were going, an island was on the other side, things like that.
I mean, that's a whole plot line on The Office.
Oh, okay. I watched
Michael Scott drives his car into a lake And he blames the technology. And they say, what did you do? He goes, I drove my car into a fucking lake. And that's how he's proving that technology is bad for business.
Right. Right. It's not user error.
Right. Right.
And I really liked Ricky September, because at first you're like, oh yeah, some annoying influencer. And then by the end, he's actually the only real one. So that betrayal really hit hard. It reminded me of 1984, the George Orwell book, which, spoiler for, you know, a decades old book. But it ends with them forcing the main character and his love to turn on each other because through torture, basically. And they're like, and he says, do it to her, do it to her. This torturing thing with rats eating him. Anyway, this hit me with that same punch, you know, where she's idolizing him. She's finally got like an actual chance with her crush until she's afraid for her own life. And then it's do it to him, do it to him. He's Richard Coombs. Yeah.
Right. Now, do you think that, and I'm not defending her because I think that was a vile thing to do, but do you think that if she hadn't done that, then she would have died and then he would have been killed?
I think, I mean, he was actually helping her, so no, I don't think.
Right, but we were given visual language that his head got wrong and that he was disoriented and not able to help her the same way.
Right. But, I mean, she could certainly fend off the bots for a little bit, you know?
Could she? Because she's really incompetent.
She is very incompetent.
Like, he has so much more coordination than her because he doesn't use the dot most of the
time. Okay, that's true. I mean, she saw how he fended it off, but she might not have the practice in using her arms.
Yeah, and I've seen a baseball game, but I'm not very good at hitting a baseball, you know? It's tough.
I mean, she already had the door open. All she had to do was get on the other side. She could have even left him there without turning the bot on him.
Good question. Good question. Well, anyway, it was a bad thing she did. Very bad.
It was bad. She's a bad girl.
I wanted Ricky September to become a companion.
I know.
I am so sad that he's gone. It was a tragedy.
Who's gonna eeny weeny lip? What does it go? Yellow polka dot bikini. So I was thinking at first that this Wild Woods thing was again this, you know, outer darkness with a barrier of protection that was being penetrated by the slugs. But then we find out that they were manufactured inside the city, so that doesn't quite work. But it is interesting how everything is up against reminding us about these barriers and the barriers keeping out the dangerous things beyond.
Right, right. Yeah, and I thought almost, even when I heard they were manufactured, I didn't think that it was the drones doing it. I thought that it was perhaps the outsiders trying to get in, like the outside human population.
Right.
Like, wouldn't it be interesting if instead of the drones doing it themselves, if it was people who service the drones, which presumably would be the servant class that they think Nshuti is part of?
Yeah, I really wanted to see what was outside the city. And I understand that's like a whole other can of CGI worms or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I just really wanted to know. I guess that was my issue with the episode at first, was I, in my head, thought that it was going to be a different type of mystery. And then but I do appreciate, I mean, not that I appreciate the cynicism, but I think that it was very well done. I think, it obviously gave me a lot to think about.
I appreciate the cynicism. I'm a big Kurt Vonnegut fan, and this fell right out of that. I thought this was a great episode, and I thought that it worked in all the ways it needed to because it was so focused. It didn't, you know, something that I think Chibnall did was he would jump all around things, especially like with the flux, be like, well, this is what the Weeping Angel are doing, and this is what the dog people are doing, and this is what this is. And it just felt really confused. And this is like, no, this is what's happening in this small town, this artificial town that just stayed in its bubble too long.
Right. No, I think, I like when this show zooms in. And I also think that was the biggest problem with the Flux storyline for me, because I was just like, the dog people and the Weeping Angels?
Yeah. Very weird. Very, very, very weird. But yeah, I mean, I'm super happy with this episode. I think perhaps they could come back and do a part two and follow what happened to the, like, maybe yes, the please. Doctor's wrong and they survive poorly and he comes right. and helps them. And they realize like they have to accept help from him. You know what I mean? They're in a position where they need to accept help. They don't, because right now they have, you know, we're the frontiersmen and we're going to go right. out there and tame the wilderness. And I think the minute they get out there,
try walking.
It's not
first.
Like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or he comes back, like, and some do survive and their kids, you know, he comes back a couple generations later and finds them mm-hmm. completely changed.
Yeah, there's a classic Who story. I can't remember if it was the first or second Doctor because they've been some so fast. I think it was the second Doctor. And basically, they go to a ship that's an ark for humans to reach another planet. And they accidentally spread like a virus that had gone extinct, like basically a common cold.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to work to cure it. They do that and they come back. They leave for a minute, they come back, but they accidentally come back like hundreds of years later.
Okay.
To the descendants of them. Right. And it turns out that the servant species that they had for them had revolted and taken over.
Okay.
I wonder if they'll do something similar here.
Okay. They touched on storylines like that in Rick and Morty too, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Which That's maybe funny. Is a nod to classic Who.
Mm. Yeah, that could be. That could be. So... what else we got here? I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I think that this episode was probably inspired by RTD looking online and seeing people wearing Apple Vision Pro and just being
Remember
like, this
the Google glasses?
I thought that was a great idea.
I think it's just that it's too visible to other people. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Makes you look like a weirdo or a creep.
Yeah, it was a little ahead of its time and all that, I think. Yeah. I think if you could figure out different technology, it would work. The Apple Vision Pro looks absurd. I'm sorry. If you own that, if you're listening on that right now, it looks absurd. I'm sorry. And I think
I don't
technology...
know what it looks like.
Oh, look it up. Look up somebody. Look up somebody wearing it. It's huge.
Okay.
And... it's just, I mean, it's very Dot and Bubble. I think that RTD saw somebody walking around like this and was like, yeah, I got to do this. I got to do something on this.
I mean, okay. It looks like basically like small VR glasses.
Small? It's like protrudes from
your
head.
I mean, compared to actual VR glasses.
Yeah. It's just funny. It's like, I don't know about this. And it looks like you look like Cyclops from X-Men.
Right. Are you a Ready Player One fan?
I enjoyed that movie. I actually, when I used to work in like audio production, I screened it one time on an outdoor showing, which was fun.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it just, I think that could be a future like that, where the interesting thing that the movie does differently than the book is the movie has, in the book, you have only all this haptic technology. So you can be in one place, but it's like you're moving around and all that stuff. Mm. In the book, yeah, it was like that. In the movie, they had people actually running around on the street with glasses like this, playing shooter games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have the treadmills that you have to run on. That's a lot of fun. At least you're moving, right?
Yeah. I was going to say this looks uncomfortable, but you know what? I wear glasses most of the day, so you get used to it.
Yeah, I guess they have like a weight balancing thing on the back of your head.
Okay.
But I don't know. It just feels like I'm going to have an indent on my head for the rest of my life if I wear that.
The biggest problem is other people think you look stupid.
right. I'm not saying I'll never buy something like this years later when the technology has shrunk and is not $3,000. But it's right now, it's just not for me. But, you know, I'm sure RTD factored in the fact that like these Vision Pros are like $3,000 for, I think, the base model. And so there already is a class barrier in our current time of who gets to live in the bubble.
Sure. Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
He's just exaggerating it.
And of course, if you are of the upper class, then you are more, you have more motivation to live in the bubble because you're trying to, you don't want to say like, oh, there's other people I should be helping or other things I should be worrying about. You just want to enjoy your privilege basically in peace.
Right. Right. Well, I enjoyed the multi-layered approach. Also, I got to say, these were such early Doctor Who villains or New Who villains because I could have seen the Ninth Doctor fighting these guys. I mean, they were Absorbaloff type beauties.
It is cool. I do recommend to those who can get access, the BBC puts out on ITV, so it's only available in the UK or if you can maneuver your computer to the UK. it's called Doctor Who Unleashed, and after every episode, they do like a little half hour behind the scenes. And it's really cool because they interview all of like the crew, especially. So you see there's actually three people who are puppeting the practical version of those slugs, and then of course a VX team doing work on top of that.
That's cool. I love practical effect monsters. That's there's nothing like it.
Yeah, nothing. And there was for the goblin, it was the same three people plus two more who were doing the Goblin King.
That's, I love that. I love that they have these people who are just in costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all cuddled up inside.
Justice for Osgood and now I can't remember the name of the species. Zygon. The Zygon. Oh, right. That's good.
Uh-huh. Justice, I actually kind of like the Zygon episode.
Oh, I do too. I like the Zygons in general.
Yeah.
I think they're a lot of fun. And I like them in the 50th too.
Mm.
Do you know probably the reason that Stephen Moffat worked them in is because David Tennant always said he wanted to go up against the Zygons and he never got them in his original run?
Oh. I like that.
Because they were a classic Who monster.
Yeah, that's right. This is a series where I can never mind fan service because it is just, it's all about the feels.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about like, what, how do you do it? And what do you do on top of that?
Yep. Yep. All right. Shall we go to listener feedback or you have any closing thoughts?
No, just that this, I recognize that while this wasn't immediately my favorite, like 73 Yards was, that this is definitely one of the best because it's forcing me to think about it so much. It's forcing me to think about various things a lot. So well done.
Yeah. And I really appreciated how it felt like the themes were interwoven into the story instead of being told to me.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Well, I felt like there was a mix of that. But yeah, that's where you and I differ.
Fair enough. One.
Yeah.
Well, let's get some other voices in. Of course, you can write into TARDIS@thelorehounds.com or you can go to thelorehounds.com/contact and leave a voicemail or a contact form entry. We've got two pieces of feedback today. One from Arthur, who says, excellent discussion, referring to our podcast on 73 Yards. Two things. As an older watcher, I was reminded of the last Tom Baker episode where a mysterious figure kept shadowing the Doctor. In the final scene, it was revealed to be the Doctor himself or an energy version thereof, there to facilitate regeneration. As Tom says with his last breath, this moment has been prepared for. Also, as an older viewer, I clear my throat in your general direction at the comment, older viewers may remember a character named River Song.
River Song wasn't long ago.
I know. It's introduced going on like 15, 20 years almost, right?
Yeah. I guess I don't remember which of us said that, but I think we just mean like pre-New Who.
New Who instead of New Who.
Right.
Putting aside all jokes about on this side of the pond, I remember a character named Sarah Jane Smith, the Lois Lane of Doctor Who. And by that, I mean the 1940s Lois who kicked donkey and was a partner to Superman, not the later Lois who always needed rescuing. As we say, four is the one true doctor and Sarah Jane is the companion.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to four yet. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm on the third doctor on my classic Who watch right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it because everybody loves Tom Baker, right? He's the one everybody cites. It's like, that's my doctor.
Exactly.
I think part of that is that he was the doctor for like 7 years.
Right.
And that's more, I think he had the longest run. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he had the longest run as the doctor.
I've seen clips of him and I can see why he seems quintessential doctor. So I'm curious, I again have barely watched any of this stuff. Actually, no, I've seen more than clips of him. I've seen a couple of his episodes. But okay. Yeah, I'm curious how you'll compare it with Two, your new great love.
Oh, I love Two. I love Two. And yeah. Three's okay. He's pretty good. It's I don't love the framing of the whole season. The whole idea of season three. Oh, sorry, not season three. The first season of Doctor Three.
Doctor Three.
Mm-hmm. He he's exiled on Earth, so his TARDIS doesn't work, and I just miss the TARDIS. You know, it feels more like a procedural than it does Doctor Who.
Okay.
And I don't know when he gets his TARDIS back. I'm hoping Three gets a chance to go to the stars. We will see.
Well, that's
interesting. Thanks for writing in, Arthur.
I wonder if that's because we were talking about the whole rights thing, about how the fact that the writers had the rights to the characters they created, which is great for the writers, but created complications for the show. And apparently the TARDIS in the early days was also iffy. So I wonder if that would explain why they would write it out for a while.
Well, he has the TARDIS and he goes into it from time to time. It's just that it can't leave. The Time Lords disabled it for a while.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
So I don't know what it was. Maybe the budget got cut, but I don't know. They still have, like, you know, monsters on Earth. It's just that he's only helping. He's working with UNIT directly. That's the whole premise of the season. He's working with the Brigadier.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. I learned because they had a whole episode called or a story called Doctor Who and the Silurians. Silurians, which, you know, come back in New Who under Matt Smith. Right. But I didn't know this, but apparently there's an actual scientific hypothesis named after the Doctor Who Silurians, which is it's this hypothesis of when humans can reach the technology required to determine if there was a previous technologically advanced civilization on Earth.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. This has been around so long, so influential in pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Jordan M. writes in, Salute les lorehounds. Oh, man,
Salut les lorehounds.
Oh, boy. The French
salut
are gonna
just means hello.
The French are just going to be angry with me. That's fine. That's fine. We're angry with you too, French.
I think he's actually Quebecois, but.
Oh, okay. Man, I don't know where anybody's from. It's true. I've been watching too much Doctor Who. Everyone's from an alien planet. With the motivation of listening to your coverage, I have been trying to catch up on New Who. Quick Who background. Grew up with my grandmother watching the original series on public television, so I'm quite the nostalgic Doctor Who fan. Pertwee was my doctor. Oh, that's where I'm at. Partially because of the Brigadier, up until Tennant stole my other heart.
Aw.
In true Whovian bifurcation, I'm allowing myself two doctors now. Donna is my all-time favorite companion, and I'm sadly a Rose hater. Sorry, Rose fans.
Wow.
I used to love Rose, but during my rewatch, I was astounded by how self-centered and awful of a person she is. I guess I had rosy-colored glasses at the time.
Ba-dum-ching.
Yeah, I'm just going to comment. I, too, had a little bit of a, oh, she did what? When I rewatched New Who. Mm. Because I think she's really mean to Mickey. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's really dismissive of her mother and all that. But she is 19, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Mickey wasn't the greatest. But then, of course, now it's hard not to think about the actor himself getting him in trouble.
I know. But, I mean, I think... If we're looking at Rose, just based on her action and the information we have about Mickey, he's whiny, but cut him loose.
Yeah.
Cut him loose if you're going to cut him loose.
I understand the haters. I do. But I do still will defend the way that her story ends. I like it.
Yeah. And I actually have been thinking about this lately. I think about Doctor Who too much. Of, you know, romance with the Doctor is something that never happened in the classic series and hasn't happened since River. Mm-hmm. In the new series. I mean, they kind of teased it with 13 and Yaz, but that's the closest we've gotten.
Right.
I was thinking, like, why Rose, right? This random 19-year-old from London. And to me, the only justification I could think of is she saw into the time vortex so she can understand him more than any other companion.
Okay. But then why River? Well, I guess because she's River Song. Yeah.
She is part-time Lord.
Right. So we did see in the trailer for next week that it looks like there's going to be a little flirting between the Doctor and there's a new character played by Jonathan Groff.
I like Jonathan Groff a lot. I'm glad he's in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm getting very Jack Harkness vibes from his character. So I am hoping that I'm right on that, actually.
Bring back Jack. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I love the scene when I was rewatching. I love the scene where Jack goes up to 10 and he says, "I'm still aging, even if I am immortal. You know, what do I do?" He goes, "I don't know. Take it up with Rose. You know, like, I can do that. You can't. I can't help you with that, buddy."
Yeah. Oh, the face of Bo.
Yep. They used to call me the face of Bo. It was a little on the nose, but that's all right.
Yeah. No, but that was a big reveal at the time. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. All right. Jordan continues. Okay, on to the present. Loving and Shuti's Doctor, but finding myself so-so with the episode so far. I'm not enjoying the addition of magic as an actual supernatural force and not just the technological ignorance. Perhaps I'm also readjusting to the Davies style, but finding myself appreciating the episodes more after your pods. Not shocking that. Than during. I don't mean to be negative, as it's definitely quality TV, but je ne sais pas. See, did I redeem myself a little bit?
Yeah, that's much better.
All right. Just finding myself often bored. Loved Boom, found Space Babies cute, but what the fuck was that? Adored Jinx, Monsoon and the Devil's Cord, but man, did I not enjoy 73 Yards. I enjoyed the concept, but it felt very drawn out. Perhaps it was the tone created by the most unwelcoming bar in the aisles, though agree, John, the wordsmith at the bar was sublime. But I just felt frustrated with the episode and not satisfied with the ending. As Alicia alluded to, I think for me it was just a bit too early to have a Sans Doctor episode, but oh well, win some and lose some. What do you think? Is 73 Yards? I know that wasn't your favorite episode either.
What? No, that was my favorite episode.
Oh, I thought it wasn't.
No, it's my number one.
I'm insane. I'm just going crazy. I thought Boom was your number one.
Boom's my number two. No.
All right, fair enough.
Was my number one when I watched it, and then I saw 73 Yards, and now Boom's my number two, and I'll give Dalton Bubble number three, and then Maestro, which I keep forgetting the name of the episode. The episode is called Devil's Jinx Cord. Monsoon. Yeah, the Devil's Cord.
Devil's Cord. I think I would go this episode, Dalton Bubble. I would go 73 Yards, and then the Devil's Cord, then Boom. So I think I'm just flipping two of yours.
Okay, and then I would have the Christmas special, and then I would have Space Babies last.
Yeah, Space Babies was the weak episode. I still am baffled by the decision to do that first.
Yeah. I mean, it was very, I guess they had to, because it was very exposition heavy. But
right.
They did film this one before the other ones, before the Christmas special even, they filmed because these were the ones when Shuti was still working on the other show. So
Right.
They did these Doctor Light ones first.
Yeah, I heard that the scene where he's begging them to let him save them was the first thing he shot as a Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, intense.
Yep. He brought it day one.
Yeah.
All right. Jordan finishes up, says, "Oh no, there I go again with one of my compliments."
Yeah.
Haha. But sounds like the show is bringing in new fans. So that's already a huge success in my timey-wimey book. Yeah. Oh, and John, tisk, 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 that you forgot about the Anglican Marines. Hello, my boys, the thin, fat, gay, married Anglican Marines. Ha ha. What is this a reference to something that happened?
Yeah, it was something that RTG did. But I, to be honest, I don't have them burned into my memory either. I just know that they exist, but I don't remember much about them.
Okay. As always, Alicia, hit me with this one.
Un gros merci.
There we go. For all your amazing coverage and looking forward to discovering more alongside you. Thanks, Alicia, John, and co. David, watch who you even miss an opportunity to add to John's old man movie list. I told David to watch this episode. I think it's right up his alley.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think with Doctor Who, there is, of course, a stuff going through, although we didn't really have much talk about, although I guess they're all orphans in the end, but we didn't have much through line in this episode per se, but in general, they're mostly standalone anyway, with the little bits of Snow and Susan Trist aside.
Right. Yeah, I do think that there's sort of a, I think the Tumblrification of Who in the 2010s made it a little stigmatized at sometimes to be a Whovian.
Okay.
And what'd you say?
I said, okay.
I just think that people saw it as this like camp, you know, niche fandom, and like you were either in it or you were out of it. And people are, I think people were less willing to give it a shot than some other fandoms because of that.
Right.
I'm hoping that new Who, with its Disney Plusification, will bring in more people who were skeptical of it, because it's a really great show. It's, especially now, I think it's really firing on all cylinders, and I hope people will give it a shot. So tell all your friends to watch it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's also like my sister said, you know, that it's for a lot of people, especially completionists, which you and I both are, when you look at something like this, and even if you ignore, you know, the fact there's 65 years or whatever of it, if you just look at the new Who starting in 2005, that's already, what, 13 seasons of stuff? So it's, people don't know where to begin. And now with the new Disneyfication, they're saying, okay, here's where you begin here now.
Right.
You got
right.
five episodes.
And people are never happy. Like, because now the classic Who people are like, well, Disney's ruining it. It's like BBC is making it. Disney just publishes it.
Right. And gives them more money. Yeah.
Anyway, enjoy your high budgets, people. Stop complaining.
Yeah, exactly. They'd still make it campy, as we see.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, this, if you don't watch this episode and go, this could have been a 2005 episode, then I don't know what you're doing. Like the monsters especially, I mean.
Right.
All right. Let's do our outro. Alicia, tell me what you're up to on your feeds.
Yeah, so on We'll Shift Dust, we just published the finale for Beacon 23 Season 2, and then there's going to be some follow-up interviews with a showrunner, Glenn Matsar, at least, and we'll see who else. And on the book club, we are doing the breakdown of the second book in the Silo series, Shift, in three parts. So that's the We'll Shift Dust book club on Patreon. And then on, you and I are about to gear up to take over my feed on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast.
Wait, really? I'm on that?
Not yet.
I'm just kidding.
But yeah, so we wrapped up our whirlwind tour of the first 25,000 years of Star Wars history, and there's an Acolyte prep episode. If you haven't checked it out yet, it'll tell you what you need to know going into the new series, The Acolyte, which launches tonight as we record. And then you and I are going to, I guess we have to talk exact scheduling, but I'm guessing episodes will come out in the public feed Friday for The Acolyte.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then I just pushed out the new Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes episode too on the Lorehounds feed.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Radioactive Ramblings is doing their Fallout lore episodes. They are also going to be covering The Boys in full when that comes out. So that's really exciting. Keep an eye out for that. A Properly Howard movie review is doing its Felonies and Fugazis series. Just check their show notes to see what they're doing next, because I always mess up what they're doing next these days. They keep adding movies, and I can't keep track of it, which is great. I mean, I'm loving their coverage. It's really funny. And Rings and Rituals is up to episode 6 of Rings of Power season 1. They're going to do episode 7 next. And they are really doing these deep discussions. I'm enjoying them, talking about elf battle songs and things like that. Go check it out. It's a really unique take on season 1, and it's a rewatch, so you can get prepped for season 2. What else we got? I think that's it for our affiliates, but you can find all that in our weekly schedule, which I forgot to post this week. You can also get stuff on our feed. We are doing The Acolyte, as you mentioned, Alicia. That'll be on the Star Wars Canon Timeline feed, but also our main feed and the Star Wars feed. And we're doing House of the Dragon season 1 rewatch ahead of House of the Dragon season 2, which we'll be doing full coverage for. And then, of course, finishing up Doctor Who this season. We've only got 3 episodes left, and I'm sad, but I'm also relieved because I have too many shows I committed to.
I'm excited for season 2 already.
Me too. Me too. And it sounds like RTD is gearing up for an annual release, which is really good.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely working ahead now. They seem to be, at least we know that season 2 is well underway with filming and everything. So
right.
Shouldn't be that long, right. But although it took forever for this one, but hopefully without all of the shenanigans, well, there's probably going to be more shenanigans. The entertainment mm-hmm. industry is not fixed yet.
Right. And other quick projects, Furiosa.
Yeah, just Furiosa. It should be public tomorrow. As
yep,
we record.
So probably, yeah. I don't know when things are coming out anymore. We have too many podcasts. We have to like double up on things.
Right.
But yeah, so that's coming out. I already recorded June's Silmarillion story. That'll be out sometime this month. A lot of good stuff coming. Alicia, who do we need to thank?
Well, first we need to thank our Discord server boosters who make all of our Discording go more smoothly, and that also helps with some technical things. So thank you very much to Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doove71, Captain Gingy 56, and Athena Angelea. And also, especially thank you to our lore masters, our top tier subscribers who make all of this possible. And that would be Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andre B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership, Gnarls, and Adrienne.
I love the Gnarls. I love the Gnarls. All right, Alicia, it's been fun. We got plenty of Second Breakfast stuff coming this month too at 11Z, so plenty of premium content coming. I will see you for the Acolyte.
Yes. See you in, just a couple days.
All right.
All right. Till then.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.